Hey, good afternoon. This is Jeff Kroger with the Office of Partner Engagement, FBI. This is Jeff. Is somebody on the line? Hello?
Hi, my name is Phil. I'm with the Orthodox Union.
Hi, this is Jeff Kroger with the FBI out of Washington.
Hi, thank you so much for joining. We're waiting for Derek to join from the Orthodox Union as well. He'll be joining shortly.
Perfect. I spoke with him a little bit ago, so yeah, we're standing by.
Excellent.
Hi, Bill Ryan from the Department of Homeland Security's on.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining. Phil Karras from the Orthodox Union.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. There are many dozen people on who are currently muted, and Adir Posey, the director of the OU Community Services Program, will be on shortly.
Fantastic. Thank you.
This is Doron Horvitz. I entered the host PIN by mistake. Hello?
Yes, Doron. Yes, we'll be going to start in another moment. Thank you.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, this is Doron Horvitz.
Hi, we're about to get started.
Hi, okay. Nathan Diamond's here.
Hi, Nathan.
I'm only going to be on for a few minutes because I'm calling from Israel.
Great. Okay, it's now 3 o'clock. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Adir Posey, and I am the Director of Synagogue and Community Services for the OU. I want to thank everyone for joining this security call. In just a moment, I'm going to turn it over to Alan Fagan, the Executive Vice President of the Orthodox Union, who will introduce our participants today. Just on a couple of practical notes, all of those who are joining the call are currently muted. We are going to have a couple of presentations. Hopefully at the end, we will have the opportunity to ask for some questions to those who are presenting. The way we will be able to do that is once these presentations conclude, we will join in a conferencing mode, which allows others to unmute themselves. And the way you'll do that is by pressing *6. Again, that'll be at the end of the presentation. And in just a few moments, we'll begin with Alan Fagan, President, CEO and Executive Vice President of the Orthodox Union.
Yehuda, are you on the call?
For those who just joined, we'll be starting shortly with Mr. Alan Fagan.
Hi, we're going to begin. I want to thank all of you for joining us on this call, and in particular to thank our partners who have helped us convene this call, Yeshiva University and the Rabbinical Council of America. Our thanks to them, to Rabbi Yaakov Glasser of Yeshiva University and to Rabbi Mark Dratch of the RCA. As we pause for a moment to honor the memory of the slain victims of this horrendous crime this past Shabbos, we also take the opportunity to pray for the speedy recovery of those who were wounded in that attack and to offer our enormous gratitude to the members of law enforcement, the men and women who responded to this call and to so many others that have taken place all across the United States in recent memory, and we really want to pay tribute to them as well. Over the past 2 days, we have spoken to well over 100 of our member shuls to try to get a sense from them about where we could be particularly helpful, and the common theme that we've heard from all of them is how to respond in very, very practical terms to issues of security and safety within their respective institutions, our shuls, our schools, and youth centers. So the purpose of this call is not to provide an update with regard to what's going on in Pittsburgh. Others have done that. The purpose of this call is to focus on practical advice from experts in the field on what can be done in our communities, in our shuls, and our schools. And we've put together an outstanding panel of experts, and I want to thank Nathan Diamond and Yehuda Friedman for helping to assemble this group. We will hear from Doron Horowitz, who is the National Security Advisor for SCN, the Secure Communities Network. For those of you that are not familiar with SCN, it's the official security and safety organization that represents the interests of the Jewish community in North America. A truly outstanding organization that has done a remarkable job of doing safety assessments and coordinating activities throughout our communities in the United States. We will also hear from Mr. Jeff Veltri, who is the unit chief of the FBI, the head of their civil rights division. He is currently supervising all of the FBI assets in the Pittsburgh investigation. He will be joined by Mr. Bill Ryan, who is Regional Director of the Office of Infrastructure Protection of the Department of Homeland Security and an expert on the interface between local communities and their law enforcement partners. After they've completed their presentations, we will unmute the phone so that we can take questions from all of you and a very, very brief set of comments with regard to halakha considerations involved in the provision of safety and security services within our shuls. So without further ado, let me turn it over to Doron Horowitz.
Toda rabba, thank you. My name is Doron Horvitz. I'm the National Security Advisor for Secure Community Network, and I'm speaking to you from Pittsburgh. I arrived here within just a few hours of the attack. Drove from New York on Shabbat. I was thinking before this call what I would say to you and share with you, and in order to unfortunately make a very important point, but also as part of the Jewish community, I think it is important that you hear about the most horrific attack on the Jewish community here. I'm a veteran of the Israeli Defense Forces. I served during wartime, and I was decorated in combat, and I endured quite a few terror attacks in my lifespan. On Saturday, I escorted, together with the community security director, the rabbi, and somebody from Zaka, to the shul to identify and do a walkthrough of a crime scene that was being managed and continued to be managed by the FBI. I had walked in and around and through 11 bodies, Yehi Zichron Baruch, with very, very difficult and disturbing images. Images that will never go away, of Jews who, wrapped in a prayer shawl, in a pool of blood, with some people's not being able to recognize because of the high power rifle that was used. Since then, I have been engaged with the community in briefings, education, empowerment, with the sole objective of synagogues and schools and other Jewish agencies to be open and to be able to receive members of the community so that they continue their lives. I am and have and am experiencing a community that is going through the process of shock, of feeling extremely vulnerable, anxious, and terrified. And our message to them and to you must be that of resiliency, mental toughness, and the focus that the obligation and responsibility to secure your facilities is of the utmost importance. The vulnerability exploited, or vulnerabilities that will be and can be exploited by those who have bad intention, will be done so if we do not take the necessary measures. Always remember that we can never control the, lack of a better word, the evilness that exists out there. Therefore, you must acknowledge and accept the responsibility that we play a significant role in owning our safety and security. The means in which we go about in achieving that has to be done by building powerful and strong partnerships with local law enforcement. The brave soldiers or police that responded was approximately 2 minutes from the first 911 call. The only reason a 911 call was made was because a few months ago, that synagogue and the rabbi went through training in both active shooter and other emergency procedures. And in one of those, the rabbi was told that he should carry a phone on him. Because of training, that rabbi was able to dial 911. If not, there would have been a much higher body count. I pray that none of you will ever experience what occurred or what I witnessed. Something positive must emerge from what occurred. Building strong relationships with law enforcement is expressed through A, don't call law enforcement when you need something. Today or tomorrow morning, when Jewish institutions, Jewish organizations are on the top of the radar of law enforcement across this country, is the right time to begin to build those relationships, to share a floor plan with the fire department and with the police department. When they respond to a scene, they should know the lay of the land. You are helping them help you. These bear no cost other than the cooperation and coordination with them. Local law enforcement, fire, or medical first responders can train you in either first aid. The fire department can help identify the right path or route when you design an evacuation plan. Local law enforcement or other organizations, including my own, can train you and hopefully will train you in what to do when. One conversation or the beginning of the conversation, the difficult conversations that you need to have with your own home or shul or synagogue and school, whatever the case may be, you must assemble almost instantaneously a small group of people proportionate or relative to the size of your organization that will be a security committee. You must begin to have the difficult conversation of what if. What would I do if someone came in to my shul or if I heard gunfire? What would my course of action be? The first step in doing so is to identify, for example, what is an evacuation route? What does that look like? When would I activate that procedure? How would people go out of the building, out of harm's way? Statistically, and we've known this forever, that for an active shooter to target a moving target, in other words, an individual that is running or moving, is a lot more difficult than if he were to approach someone in a static position. Therefore, the course of action that is taken in response to gunfire is the difference between a few dead bodies and 20 or 30 dead bodies. There were people that were able to escape and evacuate the premises. 11 of those people didn't make it. Now, please, I want to be very clear. This is in no way a criticism of the tragedy that occurred. This is a conversation about what is it that you can do and what is it that you own. An evacuation route. Choose a route and test it. A lockdown. A lockdown procedure is very simple. It is to prevent a threat from entering the premises. It is achieved by denying access through hardware and technology, through locks, from an individual or any other active threat from entering the premises. If you do not have those means, then you are unable to achieve a lockdown scenario. In other words, you can have a lockdown procedure, but you're physically unable to actually achieve it. Creating, developing relations with law enforcement and leveraging the resources that are made available. Convene a team. Design and develop, and it could be done with the assistance of your local law enforcement, an evacuation plan.
design and develop a lockdown procedure. Now, bear in mind that if you lock down and a threat does enter the premises, you have to prepare to evacuate. The other thing that is just as critical is creating a culture of security within your institution. And by that I mean, A, begin to have the uncomfortable conversation of what do I do if? Who do I call? Where do I go? How would I get there? Conversation as simple as in communication. Do I know the number for 911? What is it that I say when I get on the phone? Do police know where my address is? Did I bring them to my location and they know that this is a house of worship? That on any given Erev Shabbos or Shabbat, I have 50 to 100 to 500 people. Are they aware? Am I helping law enforcement by feeding them relevant information prior to anything? So they know, God forbid an incident were to occur, they know what they are arriving to and how to respond. These do not cost anything. And the cost of technology and hardware is not as expensive as it used to be. It's doable. But I urge you, I would say I beg of you, to begin to do something. Access control. Access control is a term used to identify or describe the point of access into your facility. I travel across this country, and there is yet a shul, or maybe there is, that doesn't leave a back door open, either for the caterers, or for deliveries, or for kids that go out and play and put a stone in the door to keep open, or for whatever reason that is potentially justified, can never be justified if I'm now creating a vulnerable situation where somebody with bad intention can exploit. When I'm dialing 911, have I even trained in how to speak? Because no matter what you say, like anything else in life, it is more important what the dispatcher or the 911 operator is hearing. And this is simple. It's, who are you? What is the reason for your call? What is occurring? Basically, to state to the who, what, where, when, and why is no longer relevant. If you think about that and you insert an element of rational thinking, level-headedness, then you are actually empowering yourself with resiliency and strength. In the first step of the things that I've recommended and pointed out here, these are the aleph bet of securing a facility, because it must serve the message of deterrent. What I mean by that is it is not important how we view the threat. Any plan, as simple as it may be, has to counter the way the threat views you. Even be more simple, in pshat, I would say this. If there is an individual who has bad intention and wants to exploit or wants to take advantage of vulnerabilities, what is the message that your shul, school, agency, whatever it may be, what is the message that you're giving to somebody who has bad intention? In other words, look inside from the outside, not inside to the outside. Are you sending a message that my building is completely open, that I have nothing in place to control access into my shul? that I have no policy when it comes to prevention or response. What is it that I'm sending to this person's brain who wants to possibly cause me harm? The message always has to be, coming here will be very difficult. Entering my premises will be very difficult. Therefore, you should go somewhere else. I'm not wishing anyone else harm, but I think you understand what I'm trying to say. Achieving a message of deterrence through prevention, which is training, education, clearly defining what your policy is, developing a procedure that will reflect that policy, and strengthening and enhancing your cooperation and your relationship with law enforcement. I've entered too many buildings where I ask, what is your relationship with your local law enforcement? And they say, it's excellent. I have the number to the chief. I call him anytime I need to. That's not the kind of relationship I'm speaking about, because it's the regular cop on the beat, as they say, the patrol officer that will be responding, not the chief. We need to go an extra step in order for that relationship to materialize in real resources. Do a walkthrough. Help with his input or her input into the development of a procedure. Start to look at the community as a whole. If you were to evacuate the building, where is it that you would go? Under what circumstances would you evacuate? Do I have the flexibility in my mindset to look at an emergency procedure like a lockdown or an evacuation? Meaning, if I were in a lockdown mode and suddenly my building has been breached and someone is entering and I hear gunshots, can I be of the state of mind that I need to go from lockdown to evacuation? That can only begin to occur when these conversations take place. So I'm going to apologize because I have other Jewish institutions that I need to get to within the next 20 minutes to ensure that this community recover and begin to move forward and to be empowered with the right tools. I also want to recognize law enforcement that I've been working very, very close with. It just so happens that the community security director here is a 28 veteran of the FBI, 28-year veteran of the FBI. We're working very close with them. They have been incredibly responsive, and we could not ask for more support. I've returned from the first funeral that took place today. Let's try to avoid that ever happening again in this country. With that, I will say thank you, and I will be happy to field questions. And then, Yuda, gentlemen, I have to go, so I apologize. So please, I'm happy to respond.
Hi, this is Adir Posey, and we're going to, just before we're able to open up for questions, we're going to turn it over to Mr. Belcher from the FBI, and then followed by Mr. Ryan from DHS.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Beltre, and as Mr. Posey said at the outset, I am the Civil Rights Unit Chief for the FBI. I'd like to start off by extending my heartfelt condolences to the Jewish community in Pittsburgh and our larger Jewish community in the United States. Within the FBI Civil Rights Program, hate crime investigations are obviously our number one priority, in large part due to the devastating impact these types of crimes happen and have on the larger community that has been targeted. Through training, outreach, law enforcement support, investigations, the FBI takes a multi-step approach to detect and deter potential hate crimes, and of course to investigate them once they have occurred. At the federal level, in general terms, a hate crime is an offense against a person or property motivated by a bias. The FBI is currently investigating approximately 200 or just over 200 hate crime cases nationwide, and just in this last fiscal year, we opened 116 investigations. 30% of those investigations target people based on religion. As such, the FBI has developed a national training initiative to help curb this and increase our educational footprint through the country. The National Training Initiative aims to strengthen civil rights education by providing standardized training and materials that all 56 of our field offices can provide to both law enforcement and non-governmental and community groups like yourselves. As part of the training, the FBI conducts hundreds of seminars and workshops and training sessions for both law enforcement, minority and religious organizations and community groups to promote cooperation, reduce civil rights abuses, and provide education about civil rights statutes. Each year, we also train our new agents on hate crimes. And one specific training that the FBI has developed, and particularly applicable after the horrific events in Pittsburgh, is our Protecting Houses of Worship training. This training seminar was developed in the wake of the shooting tragedy at the AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, and a rising number of hate incidents targeting Muslims and mosques after several high-profile terrorism events. And what this training aims to do is develop better preparedness for houses of worship to security and active shooter response. The training addresses a number of different things. First, it touches on what the federal hate crime laws are in an effort to educate the audience on what the tools the FBI has in its toolbox to address hate once it has taken place. It also addresses our uniform crime report, and this section of the instruction provides information on the FBI's crime report and how we use that data to identify trends so that we can resource our field offices accordingly to combat that threat. A big part of the training block is our active shooter program, and the first speaker mentioned having active shooter awareness. The FBI has conducted extensive studies on approximately 160 different active shooter events, and the data is often the first time the attendees have been exposed to that study. The section outlines, of course, the worst-case scenario in the preparedness of an active shooter event like we're dealing with now. Now, a big part and arguably the most important part of the training block is the preparedness part. And in this part of the instruction, we delve into the FEMA Emergency Operation Plan, which was developed, of course, by FEMA, the FBI, our partners at DHS, and other federal agencies. It breaks down the emergency operation plan to show each house of worship how they can develop their own plan. We sort of have this phrase in the FBI that failing to plan is planning to fail. And this EOP helps people that are less familiar with developing such plans with some structure on how to develop that plan, what factors you should consider in the development, and then how to execute that plan should the worst case scenario develop. In conclusion, I would really echo the sentiments of the first speaker in emphasizing the import of doing a walkthrough with local law enforcement and with our next speaker from DHS and his shop to look at the infrastructure of your facility and develop an idea of what can we do to make our facility less of a soft target, and then partnering up with the law enforcement entity in your In your synagogue, shawl, area, in an effort to develop a plan with the very people that would be responding to the worst-case scenario. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Fagan, or Mr. Posey.
Thanks so much. We're now going to turn it over to – thank you again so much. We're going to turn it over to Mr. Bill Ryan from DHS.
So, hi, everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the call. Bill Ryan, I'm with the Department of Homeland Security's National Protection and Programs Directorate. I'm a regional director out of what we deem Region 3. Region 3 comprises Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, and Washington, D.C. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the headquarters programs that have been developed that would be of interest to you today and how we deliver them through our regional offices in the field. And I would like to start, as my colleague from the FBI did, by letting the Jewish community know our thoughts and prayers are with all of you in the wake of this horrible incident. I'll start off by talking about some of the programs that have been developed at the DHS headquarters level that you may find interesting or of use at this point in time. I'll concentrate on three things: our active shooter preparedness program, and my colleague from the FBI said it very well. That is not done in a vacuum. Obviously, we all partner to deliver these resources and these programs to our partners, to our constituents. Exercises and drills and assessments. To start off with the active shooter preparedness program, we have everywhere from workshops, which are put on around the country. They're of a limited amount. They're an all-day event, and we partner with our local, state, and federal partners, such as the FBI, when we put those on. What is a little more easily accessible are active shooter preparedness presentations. I've done many of them. I have a region full of what we call protective security advisors who put them on a regular basis, often in concert with our FBI colleagues and local law enforcement. There you would find it's about a two-hour presentation, and you would find all of the information that was delivered earlier by our first speaker, and as well as my colleague from the FBI that just spoke, and kind of give you an idea of how to get that plan started, active assailant / active shooter, a plan started, some of the elements that would go into that plan, some of the things you would need to know and your congregation would need to know to help themselves, help each other, save themselves, save each other until law enforcement arrived on the scene. Additionally, there are materials we have available, from posters to booklets to pocket guides, outlining those, summarizing those things I just spoke about that would be in the presentation, and they are available in 9 different languages. So we do have those available, and I can give you the website. Actually, you can go on and print them off yourself in the different languages, and you can hang them up anywhere or give them out at any kind of gathering. The exercises and assessments, exercises can just be, hey, I'd like to put on an exercise to mimic what we at the synagogue, community center, whatever it is, would do to help ourselves until law enforcement arrived to help the situation. And we could actually help develop some type of an exercise along with our colleagues that have already spoke on the phone to just run you something, a tabletop exercise, just to talk that through. And that could be in preparation to putting a plan together. Also assessments. We have assessments from the complex type for complex infrastructure to what we call security site visits. Just a walkthrough, which has already been discussed by the previous speakers, a walkthrough to point out, hey, here are some things that may
that may need some attention or some options for consideration to reduce your risk to a threat like this or any other threats you may be concerned about. Those types of activities, those types of resources are delivered through 10 regional offices around the country. I described Region 3. Region 3 is based out of Philadelphia. And I told you about the states that that we cover, PA, Maryland, Delaware, Virginia, West Virginia, and D.C. That's repeated 10 times around the country, and there's 10 regional directors out there. So that we can put you in touch wherever you are in the country with the appropriate regional office. And, you know, in those regional offices, we have analysts. We have geospatial support. We've got our training exercise coordinators. We've got cyber specialists, chemical security specialists, all that stuff. But really what we're concentrating on today, obviously, is physical security for an incident such as what we just experienced. And just to give you a little bit of an idea, our protective security advisor in the Pittsburgh area works very heavily with the Jewish community there, has done 19 security studies over the past 3 years, many in partnership with the locals, federal partners, and the Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh security director who was mentioned earlier on the call. So please don't hesitate to reach out. Please don't hesitate to ask for this assistance. You can hit any one of us, my FBI colleague, myself. We will make sure the word gets to all those that need to be involved in a visit or walkthrough, and you'll have a team there to help you out. What I can do is pass email address for requests for these types of assessments, for these types of resources to the Orthodox Union, if that works for dissemination to everyone, if everybody has. Okay, fantastic. Thank you again for the time today, and thanks for the partnership, and we look forward to assisting in any way possible. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We're just going to, before we open up to questions, I wanted to just open up, and I think maybe, Darwin, you could speak to this first. One of the issues that a lot of communities are worried or talking about is the controversy or the discussion or the question of congregants coming themselves armed. And this isn't obviously a one-size-fits-all answer, but maybe you could speak to a little bit about the process of thinking through that question for a particular community.
Certainly. No pun intended, but that is a loaded question to which a tremendous amount of thought has been given to it. So when it comes to the issue of congregant members carrying firearms, we have to take into consideration many different moving parts. I have to say that if your security plan is expressed through the fact that you have members of your congregants carrying firearms, then as far as I'm concerned, you do not have a security plan. Not only that, but I would say that your security plan cannot be a police officer or an armed guard outside of your synagogue. The real security is a collective effort that everyone plays a role. And the reason I say that, or I should say I'll give you one example, is that if you have a police officer standing outside of your shul, he or she does not know the congregant, will not be able to identify an anomaly. Not only that, but if there was an active shooter situation, the police officer will engage in or with the individual because that's what they are trained to do. They're trained to neutralize the threat. But understand there's a whole other side of the emergency procedure. While he or she is engaged in an active shooter, I'm using the extreme scenario, then the rest of you have to still execute or activate the evacuation or lockdown procedure. So please be mindful of that. The second obvious point I will make when it comes to people being armed, and I've dealt with this situation, and I continue to deal with it. If there was an active shooter scenario, I'm going to use an example. because we're Jews and that's what we do, then an active shooter shows up on scene. All those who went to the range that week and suddenly determined that they were tactical and operational units are going to start instantaneously shooting and firing back with complete and utter chaos because they were not trained properly and appropriately and accordingly in selective or active shooter training. Just because you have a gun and just because you go to the range does not qualify you to engage in tactical shooting, moving targets, how to protect. On top of that, if, God willing, law enforcement or first responders show up to the scene, they're not going to say, hey, are you the good guy or are you the bad guy? They will, and are trained to do so, will neutralize every individual with a gun indiscriminately because that's what they are trained and should be doing. Which only emphasizes the importance of cooperation. I can give you another 1,000 examples. It's not necessary. And what is necessary is to say this. If any individual, first of all, A, the policy of the institution has to be very clear. In other words, what is our policy when it comes to having guns on the premises? If the policy is we permit it, you are now opening up yourself to liability. Now, you can say that there is a condition to that policy, the clause, saying that only Aleph, Bet, and Gimel, who are properly trained by law enforcement in active shooter training, for lack of a better term right now, can arrive or bear arms in the shul, in the synagogue. Only after they have been cleared, vetted, trained by police, and identified. Otherwise, you are taking a tremendous risk. In spite of all the stories about somebody was neutralized because somebody was armed, that may very well be the truth, but the reality is it's more likely going to be detrimental. I hope that clears, in a nutshell, a very complex question, but I believe that I've provided enough guidelines for you to make a smarter decision.
Again, thank you so much to Doron, and thank you so much to our partners, Mr. Veltri and Mr. Ryan from FBI and DHS. Again, this is Adir Posey from the Orthodox Union Department of Community and Synagogue Services. I want to just make 2 points, and then we're going to – we have almost 500 people on this call, so doing an open question and answer session is going to be very difficult. But I, again, want to just make a couple of quick points, and then we're going to open it up just for just a couple of questions. The first point is that we would love to be able to offer you these resources and additional follow-up to the extent that we're able. There is an email address for the OU. It's synagogue@ou.org. That's synagogue@ou.org, where you can contact us to ask any direct follow-ups that we'll try to direct to those partners on the call to be able to give you some of those answers that you want and assistance that we can provide. In addition, we'll be sending out a readout of this call that we'll be able to highlight some of those specific points, and we'll hopefully do that to the email addresses that we're able to receive this notification within the next 24 hours. We'll be able to try and send out that readout. I also wanted to say additional point from the perspective of us at the OU, which is that the values that are represented here, the notion of pikuach nefesh and the value of human life, the notion of taking care of the safety of our community, are paramount values in the Jewish tradition. In addition, these issues that are raised and the focus that we need to have on our practical security is fraught and connected with important halachic values. And a lot of the questions that are going to be arise in the discussions that every community is going to be having in those security committees, in creating the plans, in implementing some of the recommendations that were said today, also have halachic components to them. And it's important to make sure that we remember to follow the guidance of the halacha in focusing on the importance of these issues, but also making sure we include the halachic decisions in the parameters of the types of things that we're going to implement. With that, I'm going to ask that we open this up to a more conference mode. Again, we're only going to be able to take a few questions, and with, you know, several hundred people on the call, we're not going to be able to get to everyone. We'll be able to open just for a couple of questions. Is by pressing star 6. If you press star 6, you'll be able to ask some questions. Hopefully we'll get to a few, and then we'll be able to follow up afterwards.
I just wanted to ask questions. Welcoming people.
Hello? Hello?
How can we ask questions?
Okay.
The Millfield was big operational honesty by the shooter.
Again, I'm sorry. It sounds like a lot of people are speaking at once.
Excuse me. Mark Wiener from Chicago. Can I say
yes,
something?
Yes, Mark Wiener from Chicago.
Okay. I'm an RCA-endorsed federal prison chaplain. I have to be very clear that I'm speaking for myself and not my agency. I have daily conversations with terrorists, gangbangers, white supremacists, etc. They are out there. I also was around the corner from the 1999 Ben Smith shooting in Chicago and earlier in that the YU sniper shooting. So I've been on scene and I'm very aware of the threat. I am very concerned with the naivety in our community. And to put it frankly, again, this is my personal attitude of members of leadership that are more concerned with congregants with firearms than with the terrorists in their communities. And people that rely on panic buttons that may or may not work. I feel very strongly that the statistics on response time would want us, and I was this last night at training in our community where we train our people in our community that do our that are licensed firearm people to be involved. But the response time for people that are in the I think I disagree with some of the sentiments that I heard in terms of caring in the synagogue. There needs to be ongoing training, but it is vital that people who can immediately respond. Okay, that's my opinion.
Okay, it looks like our technology is not being able to give full voice to a lot of different pieces, so we're going to stop the Q&A here. Again, if you can email us at synagogue@ou.org, again, that's synagogue@ou.org, we'll be able to both send a readout and be able to follow up with specific questions that you may have. Again, I want to thank everyone for joining us, and we look forward to being in touch with everyone going forward.